This is the Big Stories Podcast, where we tell the amazing and inspiring stories from across the Big 12 Conference.
Welcome back to Big Stories. I'm your host, Cleon Wall. The biggest game of the year in the Big 12 is coming up this weekend. So what's the best outcome? We discuss that and more in this edition of the Big Stories Podcast.
The Big Stories Top 5 Teams.
Chase Davidson joins me from Las Vegas for this edition of the Top 5 Teams.
Last week was the first time ever that one of us had an overlapping team, and it was the number one team. Let's see if we have an overlapping team this week. You get to start out this week, so you have all the power. Who is your number 5 team in the Big 12 this week?
Yes, I'm excited to have all the power this week. But at number 5, I got Texas Tech.
Wow.
Final score, this one did not tell the final story. For about two solid quarters, I thought we were going to have another major upset on our hands. Kansas State really took this like first half personally. It was only 12-7 at half. And Kansas State is a team I've been saying can do some damage. But Texas Tech absolutely showed up and won their first game versus Kansas State since 2015, which I did not know.
Wow, Texas, I can't believe you're ranking him so low at number 5. That kind of surprises me. Okay.
Really?
Yeah, that kind of surprises me. My number 5 team is BYU. Yes, you can laugh at me and you can say I'm cheating since they were on a bye this week, but I'm ranking them here because everything worked in their favor this week, Chase. They moved up in the rankings. They're part of ESPN's Game Day. The spotlight will be on them this week as they travel to Lubbock. I think they're the number 5 team just because everything worked in their favor and nothing bad happened. So, but I couldn't rank them any higher because they were on a bye week. So that's why I ranked them number 5. All right, my number 4 team, West Virginia. I said earlier this season that I wasn't sure if they were going to win a game in conference. Then they go to 22nd ranked Houston and hand them a 45-35 defeat. This could be a defining win for the Rich Rodriguez crew there in Morgantown. Freshman QB Scotty Fox helps lead them to a victory. The defense picks off Connor Wegman twice, including a pick six. Hats off to the Mountaineers. That's why I have them ranked number 4. Chase, who is your number 4 team in the Big 12 this week?
Okay, I like that. I like that. I got Baylor, 30-3 win over UCF. I think they deserve credit here, especially because they've had a good rebound because they haven't won a game since the first week of October. And this is a dominant win. I mean, UCF, say what you want about UCF, but the Baylor defense forced 2 turnovers and held their opponent to 3 points. I mean, I'm very impressed with Baylor. I like what they did. You know, again, they do have 4 losses now. Conference championships kind of out of the cards. I really wanted this Baylor team and thought they could have the legs to go to the conference championship. But I still think they have a good season on their hands. Sorry, Robinson is still one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. But at number 3, I have Arizona. This one was a surprise to me. Not the results in just who won or lost. Colorado's obviously been shaken up. That loss at Utah was horrific. But the whooping Arizona put on them at Folsom Field in Boulder, which has proven to be a very tough place to play, even with a very average Colorado team, was impressive. This Arizona team definitely on a very positive trajectory as far as the season goes, but also as far as the program goes. I'm excited for Arizona because they've got something to look forward to. Even if this season's just a bowl game appearance, nothing super major, I think that's big just based on the program was not looking great, last season, at the end of last season. I'm very happy for Arizona and the progress they're making.
You were really thinking outside the box. I did not even think about Arizona just because they handled Colorado so deftly in their game and so handily in their game. I am choosing at number 3 their cross-state rivals. I'm choosing Arizona State. Backup quarterback Jeff Sims leads them to victory on the road at Ames. I know the Cyclones look broken right now, but it's impressive that a backup quarterback was able to do that on the road. He runs for 228 yards and passes for another 177. Yes, I know ASU turned the ball over 3 times and had 11 penalties, yet they still won. That's impressive. This is a resilient team. The Sun Devils conference title hopes are still alive, so that's why I'm putting them here at number 3. So, Chase, my number 2 team is Utah. I thought about putting them at number 1 because they hammered Cinderella Cincinnati 45-14. You know, they've hammered actually every team they played except for teams named BYU and Texas Tech. They rushed for 267 yards and three TDs. They held Cincy QB Brendan Sorsby to 221 yards, but he was only 11 for 33 in this game. Yuck. And 88 of those 221 yards were one touchdown pass and catch. Or one touchdown pass, I should just say. They continue to mow over teams, and I expect them to win their last three games. That's why I have Utah at number two. Chase, who is your number two team?
Number two, West Virginia. Obviously, they are 3-6 on the year. Knocking their first conference win, finally, they have two wins versus FBS teams this year. A ranked win versus 7-2 Houston and over 7-2 Pitt, who could likely be ranked in the next coming weeks. We just love college football. That's just what happens in college football. And I think, I mean, we talked to a reporter last week at West Virginia, and, you know, the program was not obviously expecting to win this game. I was surprised that they go to Houston and win this game, but good win for the program. It was really awesome to see that. And at number one, I have Utah. Now, obviously, this is a pretty easy number one. I'm pretty sure Cleon put them at number two because he had to. Based on how we do these rules.
Actually, I did not. I will say toggled back and forth between Utah at number one and my number one team. And I put Utah at number two. It was, to be honest with you, it was really tough. But it was really, really close. Yeah.
Yes. No, and I think UW deserves credit here. That was an absolute demolishing win. I was not expecting it to be that big of a blowout. I'm sure no one was expecting a huge margin of victory like that. But I will say I'm impressed with Utah in the fact that, I mean, it all comes down to controlling the game, and this is what this Utah team's made of. When you've seen them play these teams that are on their level or slightly lower, once they get control of the game, what they do best is just hammering the football slowly down the field. And it is unstoppable once they gain control of the game. Utah obviously has had the weakness when they are not in complete control of the game. They start to lose the breaks a little bit as the chunk plays are hard to come by. I do still think Utah has a definite shot in terms of how I think they can still beat high-quality teams in the conference. However, I don't know if the tiebreakers are going to work out for them. I am not sure, but that win was convincing because I thought Cincinnati matched up fairly well against them. I was completely wrong. Utah looks so good, especially at home at night. It is crazy. But, wow, what a comeback win, or a comeback, you know, two games for Utah since that rivalry loss. I'm very high on Utah. I think they deserve to be a top 15 team in the country.
Yeah, they've been impressive. They've been impressive. I thought that Cincinnati would be, I guess what I should say is I was hoping for a close game with Cincinnati, and it just didn't happen. Yeah. That Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Well, really, Utah's defense too.
Yeah, yeah. Rice-Eccles Stadium is such a tough place to play a game, and they do a fantastic job up there of rattling whatever team comes in to play them. So hats off to Utah. I almost put them at number one. And I feel a little weird putting Texas Tech at number one, or at least my number one team. I feel like I should put them at number two because they were sloppy at Kansas State. But they were sloppy on offense, and they still won by 23 points over the Wildcats. That's when you know you have a good team. And even though they were sloppy, they came out and they still whooped on Kansas State, and they created five turnovers. So that's why I put Texas Tech at number one. Maybe it's also because I feel like I have to put them at number one just because of the game they're going to play this week. But in reality, I toggled back and forth between Utah and Texas Tech. I could have put either one of them at number one and the other one at number two. So, I'll put Texas Tech at number one this week. No overlap this week. Congratulations. It'll be interesting to see what happens next week when we come out with our top five teams. Chase, thanks a lot.
The Big Stories, five biggest storylines. Number five.
Why are we talking football? I mean, basketball season is finally here. The season started on Monday. A few teams have marquee matchups this week, but I'm going to be honest, we're recording this before any of the games will be played. I'm just excited that basketball is back. The other exciting aspect, six of the conference's 16 teams are ranked in the top 25, with Houston coming in at number two and BYU eighth. I would say that shows the strength of the conference, and it does, but there are other conferences that are just as strong. That's according to the pollsters. The Big Ten has six teams in the top 25, including number one Purdue.
The SEC also has six teams. Defending national champ Florida is the third-ranked team in the nation. That means 18 of the 25 teams come from three conferences. But just like football, the preseason top 25 doesn't really mean much unless you win your games. You would have to figure that at least two of those teams that are from the Big 12 that are in the preseason top 25 will drop out by the end of the season. Iowa State and Kansas are 16 and 19, respectively. So those could be good guesses, but I think it's hard to figure out in this world of the transfer portal what's going to happen. I'm not sure I'm ready to bet against TJ Otzelberger with Iowa State and Bill Self of Kansas. So which teams could surprise or even jump into the top 25? I would guess Baylor would be one of those teams. Scott Drew and his staff have done too many good things over time not to be considered a potential contender outside of the top six. Plus, you got to remember, he did win a national championship at Baylor. Kansas State and Cincinnati are always tough. I'm interested to see what new coaches Ross Hodge and Alex Jensen bring to West Virginia and Utah. That's another couple of teams who could be scary. Again, basketball season just started. That's enough basketball talk. We'll get more into basketball next week.
Number four.
I'm calling this segment, "Aw, man, that stinks. What now?" Two of the feel-good teams in the Big 12 go down hard. One of them was kind of expected. The other one, possibly expected. Let's start with the kind of surprising one, Houston. They lost at home to WVU, who had not won a conference game to date. But is it really that surprising, or did we think Houston was better than they were because of a win against Arizona State on the road when ASU was ranked? It might be just that. Houston has been living on the edge this year. They had to hold on to beat ASU, even though they had a 24-0 lead. They kicked a game-winning field goal at home against Arizona to win that contest and had to score 14 points late to take Oregon State to overtime, and then they beat them with a field goal. So what now for Houston? Well, the Cougars, they're still a great story this season, and maybe if they just think about that, the fans think about that, that could be enough. They are 7-2, and they could get to 9 or 10 wins. I just don't see them rallying to make it to the conference title game. Now on to Cincinnati. I'm not surprised the Bearcats lost at Rice-Eccles Stadium. I've seen plenty of good teams lose in Salt Lake City at night. For the feel-good aspect of it, I was hoping the Bearcats would make it close in the second half after cutting Utah's lead to 10 on an 88-yard TD pass. Alas, they go 3-and-out on the next drive after intercepting Utah and the route was back on. So what now for the Bearcats? For them, they're fortunate to have a bye week and then Arizona at home. I would be surprised if they can't beat the Wildcats at home. I think the Wildcats are good. I don't think they're great. And also, if you think about it, the Bearcats are undefeated at Nippert Stadium. I think Brendan Sorsby and the guys heal up and come out strong against Arizona. They need to get back on track against the Cats because BYU comes to the Queen City the following week.
Number three.
I'm still standing, and yes, I'm thinking of that Elton John song, but I'm not going to sing it for you. Feel lucky that I'm not going to do that. I'm referring to the teams with two conference losses who are still standing and hoping to get into the conference title game. There are four teams with two losses in conference. We already talked about Houston, so let's briefly mention the others. Utah, this is probably the best team with two losses. I think the Utes will win out, even though two out of their last three games are on the road at Baylor and Kansas. They also have a home game against Kansas State. I don't think any of those teams have the bulk or power or whatever you want to call it to stop the Utes on offense, and the Utes' defense will travel. The problem with the Utes is they need a lot of chaos to get to the title game. If either BYU or Texas Tech ends up with two losses, they would have the head-to-head matchup advantage over the Utes. They might be the best team with two losses, but losing to the top two teams in conference will probably cost them a trip to the title game. Then there's TCU. The Frogs are coming off a bye week and have four games left, and I think they will still be in the conversation after this weekend when they host Iowa State. But I think they fall at BYU the following weekend, even if they beat the Cougars. They go to Houston, which could still beat them, and then they host Cincinnati, who could still be battling to get into the conference title game at that point. It's not looking too good for the Frogs. Then there is Arizona State. They lost to Utah earlier this year, but they have the best win out of the two lost teams, taking down Texas Tech at home. And they have the best schedule to finish this season. They host West Virginia, play at Colorado, and then host Arizona. I could see them winning all those games, but they'll have to do it with backup QB Jeff Sims. Starting Sun Devils quarterback Sam Levitt won't return this season after having surgery on his foot. Sims would need to lead them the rest of the way. He did it against Iowa State, but can he do it for three more games? In reality, a lot of chaos would have to happen at the top for any of these two lost teams to get in.
Number two.
The big game in West Texas. Undefeated BYU heads to Lubbock to play the best team they will face this year, Texas Tech. The Red Raiders spent a lot of money on their roster, and it's paying off. As we mentioned earlier, Texas Tech played a sloppy game early with Kansas State and still won big. They've got a good defense and a balanced offense. They win this week, and you could pencil them into the conference title game in Arlington. After this, they host UCF and play at West Virginia. I know the Mountaineers were frisky, and Morgantown is a tough place to play, but I would be shocked if the Red Raiders lose either of those games. Even though the Cougars are coming off a bye this week, I think everything about this game favors the Red Raiders. But BYU is the undefeated team and has figured out a way to beat every single team along the way with a freshman QB. So I invited BYU Sports Nation Spencer Linton on the show to talk about BYU's offense with Bear Bachmeyer and how they can move the ball down the field against Red Raiders defense, who is ranked 10th in the nation in total defense.
Well, first and foremost, Cleon, it's fantastic that BYU has had 2 weeks to prepare for an elite defense and the best in the Big 12. BYU needs every single one of those days. But I will add that while Texas Tech's defense has been so good, as you pointed out, and they're so vaunted, BYU's offense has been incredibly efficient, especially during their two biggest games to date, which have come in a row in the win against Utah and the win over Iowa State. BYU's taking care of the ball, specifically Bear Bachmeyer. 20 total touchdowns, only 4 giveaways. A 5 touchdown to 1 giveaway ratio through 8 games for a true freshman quarterback is incredible. So in terms of specifics of getting ready, one, BYU is just trying to get healthier. And I'm starting to lean toward LJ Martin being available to play in this game for BYU. It's not confirmed. I'm just going off of conversations that I've had within and around the program. It feels like he is pacing to play, which will help BYU's offense in a major way, no doubt, at least to make Texas Tech's defense have to respect him while he's on the field so that that play action pass, which from a metric standpoint has probably been the best thing that BYU has been able to do this year. Because they have established that run with LJ Martin and that really strong offensive line. If BYU can force Texas Tech to have to respect it and then bring that play action pass into play, then that could mean some opportunities for BYU to take some shots against Texas Tech's secondary, which is good, but they have at times been exposed a little bit. So that's probably a long way to answer that I believe BYU is going to implement that play-action pass with the return of LJ Martin if and when he's cleared, and lean on the prowess of Bear Bachmeyer of making good decisions and taking care of the ball, especially against a team which we saw. If you're Kansas State and you gift Texas Tech five, I shouldn't say gift, you give it away 5 times, Texas Tech earned some of those, there's no way you're going to beat them. Can BYU stay even in that category and at least have an even turnover margin? I think BYU's got a real shot to win the game if they can do that.
The Cougar defense is 27th in total defense. They woke up in the second half against Iowa State and only allowed 3 points. I'm assuming they want to set the tone with physicality as soon as they touch that field in Lubbock.
No doubt about it. And Justin Enna has been clear each and every week. The message from him to his linebackers is to set that physical tone, to play with violence. Obviously within the rules of the game, but he wants them to bring the physicality and the violence that is natural to football to this game. BYU is going to get punched. The challenge is to punch back like they did, as you mentioned, against Iowa State, and just hang around. Like that's what this BYU team does so well, is they just hang around. They take the punches in the early rounds. And they're down double digits. They've been down double figures in all 3 of their Big 12 road games and won all of them. That is amazing. I'm not saying that that's sustainable against a team like Texas Tech, but if BYU can just hang around and play that physical nature to show Texas Tech, hey, we are a physical defense too. And 2 weeks to try and get healthy with Jack Kelly and Isaiah Glasker. Not sure we're going to see Raider DeMooney, but my goodness, it just feels like the bye week happened at an absolute perfect time for BYU to have more preparation time for the best team in the Big 12 and to try and get healthy so that they can feel better about matching the physicality that Texas Tech will bring.
I want to jump back to the offense for just one more moment here. BYU was able to survive without much of a rushing attack from the running backs against Iowa State. Are we going to see offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick chuck it a bit more against the Red Raiders? Or was that just a one-off where they just had to make an adjustment on the fly and say, hey, we got to do it this way this game, but once we get our rushing attack back where we want it to be, at least with the running backs, we're going to go back to what we usually do on offense.
I love that you brought this up because this is a massive pat on the back and shout out to Aaron Roderick and his ability to adjust. He's taken his lumps from the media and from the BYU fan base at times for not being creative enough or being aggressive enough. He is pushing the right buttons this year in games. We always credit Jay Hill for making these incredible adjustments, and deservedly so. He's been so great for BYU on the defensive side of the ball in that realm. BYU's offense and Aaron Roderick are doing the same thing. They're making those proper adjustments. As far as airing it out, it's just nice to know that if BYU has to do that, that Aaron Roderick feels like he can go to that well. And the Iowa State game is a perfect case in point there. I'm going to go back to something I said a few minutes ago, which is the play action game. BYU has an opportunity here, if LJ Martin is playing, to take some shots in that specific play sequence and that portion of the playbook. I just feel like it will be instrumental. It has to be. And Aaron Roderick is a master of playing chess, of using the play action, of using the jet sweep, using different looks where you kind of lull a defense to sleep because they've seen it 4 or 5 or 6 times, and then bang, there's a trick play, or bang, there's an over the top long pass down the field on the play action. I do anticipate that we'll see that. And yes, I think that BYU, if they want to win this game, probably has to rely a little bit more on passing the ball down the field and trying to find some soft spots in the Texas Tech defense, which I believe at some point will test BYU in some zone coverages, and there will be some areas where BYU can throw the ball. We'll see if they adjust and just go straight man up and say, okay, beat us one-on-one. But there will be opportunities for BYU in the pass game.
It's the second week of ESPN's Game Day featuring the Big 12. But I would say this is the biggest of the two games. If you take allegiances out of this, Spencer, think about the implications for this game for the conference. Do you think the Big 12 is just hoping for a good, close game no matter who wins, because it shows the strength of the conference, and it might even show, even if Texas Tech loses or BYU loses, hey, you still need to consider us for the playoff. One of these teams might still be able to get in as an at-large bid.
Yeah, juicy matchup to say the least. All of the layers, some that you just specifically referenced, and what's best for the conference. Frankly speaking, from Brett Yormark's vantage point, it's probably better if Texas Tech wins this game for the conference strength to have a couple of teams be in the college football playoff conversation. If Texas Tech loses a second conference game, it's going to be a little harder for them to generate enough momentum to go back into that Big 12 championship game. And if they lose the Big 12 title game, have a resume that's going to be welcomed by the committee as good enough to get in as an at-large. I don't think a three-loss Texas Tech team has any shot, or any three-loss Big 12 team has any shot of getting into the college football playoff. At best, it would be a scenario where you're like SMU last year, where you go into your ACC title game, you have one loss. It was the BYU of all teams. They played a competitive game, like you were talking about, lost close to Clemson, but because it was close and they were playing in a conference championship game, they were not going to be punished for playing in the ACC title game, whereas a bunch of other teams like Alabama didn't even get to their conference championship. So for me, it's can the Big 12 have 2 one-loss teams going into the Big 12 championship game, and then whoever loses has enough in the resume to still kind of sneak in as an at-large, and obviously whoever wins the title game has the automatic bid. That to me feels like the most likely scenario for the conference to get 2 teams in. But circling back to your initial point, what's best? Yeah, it's probably for the conference. It's probably that Texas Tech wins that game and then BYU wins out, and maybe there's a rematch of those two teams in the Big 12 championship. But we're we know who signs the paychecks. We're a BYU show. We all want BYU to ascend to that next level. It's not bad for the Big 12 if they have an undefeated team that is, you know, pacing for the top five and has. Listen, if BYU gets through this Texas Tech game, they have a legitimate shot to go undefeated in the regular season for only the third time ever. They did it in 1979 in the regular season, ultimately losing in the Holiday Bowl, and of course the national championship year where BYU went 13-0. It just doesn't happen. But if BYU wins this game, they could legitimately run the table and have an undefeated regular season in a Power Four conference. And then I feel like, you know, the Big 12 has their bell cow. It's like, hey, BYU, undefeated. If they run the table, they'll probably be in the top three or four, Cleon. And now we're talking about a team that has a bye in the first round of the college football playoff if they can win that game in Arlington. A lot of big ifs, but gosh, it's just fun that we're having this conversation at all.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You're going to be in Lubbock for the game. Catch a few tortillas for me, okay?
Texas Tech is hoping there are no tortillas thrown on the field because this would be an advantage for BYU.
Very true. Very true. Spencer Linton, thanks a lot.
You got it.
Number one,
what is the best outcome of the game in Lubbock? I wanted to go back to something I asked Spencer. I asked him if the conference wants a close game regardless of the outcome. It would show the stakeholders of the college football playoff that the Big 12 has two good teams and could mean that they get two teams into the college football playoff. If BYU is blown out by Tech, it makes the Red Raiders look good, but then everyone wonders if the Cougars really are any good. Same thing if BYU blows out the Red Raiders. I'm not sure that's going to happen. In my feeble little mind, I think the best outcome for the conference would be for BYU to win, maybe even close, probably close, then stay undefeated and then lose in the title game to Texas Tech. That would probably guarantee that two teams get in the college football playoff from the Big 12. Of course, this is just all a guess on my part. Who knows what's going to happen over the next 4 weeks. ESPN's Heather Dinich wrote that these two teams still have the best shot of making the conference title game, but is that what's best for the conference? I think it is. As of right now, they have the strongest resumes, and if BYU can win in Lubbock and at Cincinnati in a few weeks, their resume will improve. Listen, this is the game of the season for both teams, and it could tell us a lot about each team. For my money, and by the way, I'm not spending or betting any money, I hope it's a close game and shows the nation that the Big 12 does play big-time college football just like the SEC and Big Ten.
The Big Stories Top 5 Quarterbacks.
Number five, Arizona's Noah Fifita, 213 yards passing and four TDs, and he got to sit out early since the Wildcats were so far ahead of the Colorado Buffaloes. Number four, WVU's Scotty Fox Jr., 157 yards passing and one TD, 65 yards rushing and two TDs. You might think, oh, those are not impressive numbers. They're okay. Most importantly, he led the Mountaineers to their first conference win of the year. At number three, I feel like I always have Devin Dampier in the top five. He's a well-rounded quarterback for the Utes. His completion percentage wasn't good, but he still passed for 213 yards and two TDs. He also ran for another 78 yards. At number two, Texas Tech's Baron Morton comes back from injury and leads the Red Raiders to a road win at Kansas State. Oh, and he also threw for 249 yards and two touchdowns. And number one, I'm giving it to ASU backup QB Jeff Sims, 228 yards rushing and two TDs, 177 yards passing and another TD. It was also his first win as a starter since 2022, back when he was playing for Georgia Tech.
The Big Stories, Big Man on Campus.
I could give this to Tech's defense for their impressive game against Kansas State, but I'm going to give it to Baylor's Michael Trigg. The tight end had five catches for 82 yards and a TD. And you might think, well, yeah, great. Five catches, 82 yards, a TD. But the TD was impressive, out-muscling a defender, catching it with two hands and then switching it to one hand so that the defender didn't strip it away. It was like he was palming a football. If that's the best way I can describe it. You should go check it out. Check out his second catch, which was a one-handed grab as he was going to the ground. He was deft enough to put his paw on the ball before it hit the ground, then pull it into his body so that he didn't lose it. Michael Trigg, you are the big man on campus this week. Check out this Thursday's episode of Big Stories. It's about Colorado's new Ralphie mascot and the inspiring story of the woman behind the Ralphie program. It's a big story you don't want to miss. Download and subscribe to the Big Stories podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Cleon Wall. Big Stories is a production of BYU Radio.